For over 10 years, VOC Nation has taken listeners behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Our hosts are not only experts on the business, but have lived in the business. Subscribe and hear weekly podcasts from hosts like legendary pro wrestling journalist Bill Apter, former Impact Wrestling star Wes Briscoe, former WWE and AWA broadcaster Ken Resnick, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, former WCW star The Maestro, NWA legend The Raging Bull Manny Fernandez, and much more. VOC Nation programming is free on most major podcasting apps, including iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Radio.com. And video podcast and bonus content is available on Patreon for as low as $3 a month. What are you waiting for? Head to VOCNation.com and dig into the most comprehensive podcast network built for pro wrestling fans. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at VOC Nation Wrestling Network and follow us on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Okay, guys. Let's play a little hockey. Huh? Yeah!
Welcome to Obey the Puck. I'm Dan. I'm here with Mike D from Orange and Black Pack.com. Well, Orange and Black Pack on Facebook, and look him up on Twitter. What's your Twitter page?
It's Mikey D underscore O and BP.
And there's a very significant reason why Mikey's here today, because I think it was, I've been asking Mikey to come on the show for a couple of years, because I don't know if any of you know this, I'm a Flyers fan. That's a joke, you all know. And the Flyers have been more like this the last several years, ever since the start of the podcast, so essentially it's my fault.
But roller coaster of emotion.
Yeah, that's sure. Roller coaster. We'll go with roller coaster. But all of a sudden, a month ago, yeah. I finally got the text from Mikey going, so I'll come on your show now. And I forgot what blowout loss it was at this point, because there's been six. But
could have been after a Sabres blowout.
It might have been the Sabres game where he was like, I'm ready to come on now. So here we are. So for 30 minutes, I know people call it the Flyers bitch fest. We're not going to bitch. We're going to talk about the Flyers and what happened. Sean, Cash and I did one. We're doing another one outside of the Another Flyers podcast realm.
Let's do it.
I want to set it up like this, sir. The Habs series last summer during the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yes.
My doubts of this team game one. It's all done. You can verify me. You can click up those receipts if you want on social media, folks. From that first game on, I detected an issue.
Yeah.
And
An
undercurrent, an uneasy feeling. Something was wrong.
Yeah.
Something happened. Yes, they were the best team going into the playoffs before lockdown. Absolutely. They started playing again. They got through through those preliminary games, and it was okay. And then round one hits, and I'm like, it's something broke. The axle broke. The wheel's flat. I don't know what's going on. The shorter version of it, and you can elaborate after this, is Niskanen's off in the offseason. Little to no changes. Same team almost going in.
More or less.
We go 9-2 or something. And I'm saying the same thing, and the same people online are saying they're 8-2. Shut up. And I was like, I'm telling you there's something wrong, and the wheels have come completely off. My first question, when did you first start knowing or feeling there was a problem?
The first feeling that I – had, I mean, it kind of predates our playoff series with Montreal.
Wow.
I know the team got hot in the prior, let's call it 60 days before COVID really came down. And that was good. That's a good thing. You want to get hot at that time of year.
Sure.
Leading up to that point, I believe we were just over a 500 club. And you know, if we had gone on some three game skid, then we could just have easily been leapfrogged and we would have been right back into a bubble, but we didn't. The Flyers, you know, they, they rallied and they started winning a whole lot of games, and they were playing really great hockey too. I mean, it was enjoyable stuff you hadn't seen through the Hextall era. So I guess it goes back to about 2018 when I think Chuck had just come in, or Hextall was just at the end of it. I knew I was ready by the time Hextall was pushed out. I knew by then I was ready for a move, something, a hockey trade, you know, not yeah. something like moving Shen and we'll take on Laterra and we'll get two first round picks, which, you know, we got Farabee out of it and he's looking like he's going to be a player, and a player that this organization's been missing for a while. But I wanted something that meant more to the NHL product. I knew Giroux was great. I know that Voracek can play great. You know, Gostisbehere, he can play great. We had players that can play great, but I knew that there was just a little something extra that we were missing. We can go back to when Mark Stone, when everybody knew Mark Stone was available. And I was like, this is a kid. He's a winger, first of all. And he is constantly in Selke talk, you know, like he's in the running for the Selke. And that's, you don't see wingers winning the Selke very often. You know what I mean? Like, and going even back to 2012, when Jágr had mentioned that Voracek could, you know, be the next Marian Hossa, I latched on to that because I was like, holy shit. Yeah, he can definitely be the next Marian Hossa. But, you know, he's got like a million-dollar talent and a 10-cent head. But when I knew Stone was available and I saw that there were teams that were actively after him, and then I had read that it doesn't make sense for Hextall to go after him, I'm sitting back like, this is a kid in his early 20s. He's a top-line winger. He's great he's a great two-way player. He's in the Selke. He's going to be a Selke player. Like, why the hell wouldn't we go after this guy? Why wouldn't we spend draft picks and prospects that we've been gathering to trade for this kid? But instead, of course, he went off to Vegas. And you know, going back to 2016 when Zibanejad was available, I was still drinking the Hextall Kool-Aid, and I was just sitting back and thinking, you know, like, oh yeah, that's a really good player. He'll go somewhere and he'll probably do really well, but I know what Hextall's doing here, and I've got the patience for it. And that's what we're all about, the patient approach and building out the pipeline and letting that NHL product just stale out. And that, you know, at the time that was fine because Giroux was still in his 20s. Couturier was still in his early 20s. Voracek, mid 20s. We still had a very, very good core to build around. But I always figured that there was going to come a time like, all right, when are we going to take that big next step? And then when he signed JVR, I was like, all right, now we're starting to take a step. I'm not a big fan of JVR. I've never really been a big fan of JVR, but I thought that was just, that was a signal. That was a sign. We're ready to gear up. And then it just didn't. And I sat around like, well, what are we doing? We're really just going to wait for all these prospects to come up on the NHL roster. Even then I knew you can't build a complete roster, or, you know, virtually a complete roster with just draft picks. They're not all going to pan out. And I understand that we can take a look at their highlights from juniors or NCAA or even across the pond in some of the European leagues, which I value even more because, I mean, those are professional leagues. Yeah. Those are full grown men. That's why I got so pumped up about Lindblom, you know?
Yeah.
And him coming over. I'm still pumped about Lindblom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not. He's the least of my worries right now.
Right, but to kind of bow on this tangent that I'm on, last year going into the playoffs, especially after the round robin, I was psyched. I knew you don't have to be the best team to win the Stanley Cup. You really don't. But you do have to get hot going into the playoffs, or else you're going to have a difficult time trying to find your footing, especially in a playoff series. It's pretty difficult to do that. And we didn't have the talent to do it. But after that round robin series and going into game one, you said you started worrying after game one. I'm watching game one like, all right, we're struggling a little bit, but, you know, it is the playoffs. Everyone's psyched up. You know, at least we won that game. We'll show up in game two and then game two. We'll show up in game three. And we weren't seeing how they were playing.
No.
People are going to like put that blame on Vigneault and how he switched up the forecheck or his strategy and whatnot. But dude, you still got players on the ice. They still got to perform. They still got to play hockey, and they just weren't, they looked hesitant. They looked like, they looked like they were the lesser team all along. Thankfully they pulled through. But after that series, I look back and I'm like, you know, that Montreal team is going to be, it's going to be dangerous someday. But what the hell was that? How can
it shouldn't have been like that year. There's no way.
Look, I picked them to win in six too. So they did win in six, but we got to consider the context. How did they win it? You know, there should have been some blowouts. You know, we should have dictated the game. We should have done a whole lot of things, but we didn't. And I knew with the Islanders waiting for us, you know, they're a bigger, heavier team, more defensive. I think their goaltending was a little bit more stable at the time. And I'm considering, you know, not just Varlamov, but, you know, their tandem versus ours.
Yeah.
And so when we went into that series with the Islanders, it was night and day. You know, there was, which game was it where we'd gone up 3-0 and we allowed them to come back. And I think they even went ahead and we scored a game tying goal. And then it led us into overtime. And then Myers, of course, you know, wins that game. But we won what, three games in that seven game series, obviously. And they were each in overtime. And you got to be a good team to get luck. I know that you've got to be a good team to get, I'm not saying that we're like a doldrum team, but man, you've got to show up better than that. And in the fact that you had a young player in Travis Konechny who led your team in scoring the entire regular season, shows up in the playoffs and doesn't score a goal. I mean, like, I can, you know, I can hope and be supportive all day long, but what's the reality? How could he not rise to the occasion? How could several of our players not rise to the occasion like that? And that got me questioning, honest to God. And I don't want this to sound like it's, you know, a knee-jerk reaction, but it made me start questioning the leadership group. It made me start questioning Giroux's leadership qualities or Voracek's leadership qualities, Hayes's leadership qualities, you know? And it was a very sobering thought. I didn't want to speak it out loud because of obvious reasons. People
Well, Flyers Twitter is so discussionary based.
Yeah, there's plenty of room for discourse. I figured, look, I might have this feeling that this team has a whole bunch of needs and it's not going to come from the inside, but at least we've got a playoff caliber team. We're going to go into next season and we're going to do well enough to at least get into the playoffs where they might have their chance, you know, to shut a guy like me up. And we're not even going to make the playoffs. No. It was a complete and total embarrassing season. I think it was absolutely worse than the 2006-07 season when you consider the context of it all.
And let's just get that out of the way. No question. There's no question about that, what you just said.
Well, think,
go ahead. No, go ahead, please.
I'm taking control of the podcast here. I want you to get a couple of words in. But,
no, they're tired of talking. They're tired of hearing it from me.
But I lost my train of thought.
It's worse than the 06-07 season.
Okay, so yeah, you want to go back to, if you want to talk about like some of the worst moments in Philadelphia Flyers history, you go back to that series with the Blues back in 1969 when the Flyers just got shoved around and Ed Snyder just pulled all stops and said, "We're not dealing with this bullshit anymore." And it created the Broad Street Bullies. You know, we beat our way to the Stanley Cup. I'm not saying that we got to go back to that, but you knew then and throughout all of Ed Snyder's life with the Flyers that no matter how bad they are, and you could do this in 2006 and 07, no matter how bad they were, you knew that management, ownership, the entire front office was not going to tolerate it. You knew that they were the ones with that's bias for action. Chuck Fletcher came in and says, I have a bias for action. No, that was bias for action. And people will tell you, well, where did it lead? It got you two Stanley Cups in the 70s, but nothing after the fact. Well, you know, we made it back to the final however many times, six or seven times. We were a constant playoff team with, you know, a few exceptions.
There was heart on the ice.
There was heart on the ice. And you're missing that, I believe, now. I would say I wouldn't feel as bad about this season if I knew that ownership and Chuck Fletcher weren't going to tolerate it. Even going into the season, Vigneault said that getting into the playoffs is non-negotiable. And then halfway through the season, when everything started headed south and we couldn't buy a win, he said, oh, we're trending in the right direction. And that was, you know, about a month and a half ago or so. I mean, we're in COVID now. So like all this time just
it was 30 years ago, Mike.
Yeah. A month and a half ago, 30 years ago, it's all the freaking same in my head. And then just today, you know, the Flyers release a video of Vigneault saying that, you know, we're going to take this time to check out some younger players that wouldn't time. And it's just like, I
didn't even see it, man.
Groundhog's Day. It's Groundhog's Day. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to
hear any of them. I know they have to do the press conference thing, but it actually enrages me that I can watch a game and watch them lose 6-1 now and go, like I said, off stream and just go,
yeah, this is it.
It's the press conference where I'm like, I'm going to kill one of them. I'm going to strangle one of them. Stop talking.
Now, when he dropped that, when he said, we're trending in the right direction, that's when I unplugged. Not that I stopped watching. I can't stop watching.
No, I can't. I'm obsessed with hockey.
If I can watch, I'm going to watch every single game. That's right around the time where I was like, there isn't anything he can say, and it's not on him. I'm not putting it all on him.
Oh, no, I hear you.
There's literally nothing anybody can say. You can even go to Chuck Fletcher's press conference, you know, the State of the Flyers interview that he had. And I just knew it was going to be a whirlwind of cliches or, you know, just bullshit.
I ignored all of it. You and I have been watching hockey around the same amount of time. I luckily got into it like the year before Lindros came to town.
Okay.
And I guess it was because they knew it was a possibility. I don't remember how. I was too young, but I just remember going to my first hockey game and going, this is what I want to be part of this. Either way, fandom wise or whatever, the other way we've discussed privately, that's not happening. Never was going to happen. But hockey all the way, hockey and basketball. But we'll talk about that off air one time. You and me as local guys. It was all about the hockey. And then luckily 2 years later, another hockey team was put in right across the street.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like perfect timing. Won a Calder Cup second year. It was perfect timing. I've watched more hockey than I can remember. I've watched more good seasons as bad. To bring up 06-07, that's the only year that I put a payment plan down on tickets.
Really?
And I never did it again.
Oh, man.
I didn't know. Forsberg's captain will be good.
No. That did not turn out to be a very good season at all.
No, I just remember ending that season with, well, we beat the Devils. We got Marty Baron. Well, we beat the Devils.
Well, look, that season, the team still went out and they traded for players. I mean, we'd gotten Coburn, we'd gotten Biron, we'd gotten Parent, we'd gotten help me out here. Who else did we get? We got
God, I don't even remember, dude.
Then what that did was that
Umberger.
No. That led into the off season where we traded for Timonen and Scott Hartnell's signing rights.
That's right. Yes,
signed them. Then we landed Briere on free agency. And, you know, those were the kinds of moves that you expected from a team that did as lousy as they did. And I thought that perhaps maybe this season was going to be a similar opportunity. I know that because we're in a flat cap, it's not going to rise for some time. I knew that like going out and trading for, you know, four different players midseason is just, it's not going to happen. But I was still kind of hoping that we'd go out there and get you know, a younger, warm body that we could put into the NHL and onto the NHL roster and lead that into an off season where then we can start making those bigger surgical moves. And it was, you know, Scott Laughton gets re-signed for 5 years. I like Scott Laughton a lot. Great. Whoopee. Trade away.
That's what I said.
Trade away Gustafson for, I mean, next to nothing.
I was okay with that. See you later, dude.
Well, yeah, no. Look, I was okay. I was okay with the trade deadline in general, but it was just anticlimactic. Just like this season's almost been, and it's.
I think the Niskanen thing knocked this whole thing off kilter. I don't know if Chuck had any real plans. But I think the Niskanen thing killed it even further. And I kind of compare it to the Phillies where you and I and others are acknowledging the problem. Like Niskanen's a big loss. Mm-hmm. Kelly, and I think Kelly just joined the show late. Mm-hmm. I told her to wait because we're doing flyer stuff. Kelly, are you there? Well, I'll ask her in a second. Oh, hello. Kelly.
Hello, Mike.
When we signed Niskanen, I immediately walked to Kelly. It was like, Kelly, this is good. And then when they lost him, the impact that was told to, like, it's going to hurt the blue mm-hmm. line, losing him. Yeah. And comparing it to the Phillies where there's pitching issues and they did nothing. And the Flyers did nothing. They did nothing. I don't know. This is what I'm doing. Still,
and some of those insiders will tell you all day long that there was nobody else in the NHL trying harder to trade for a top pairing defenseman than Chuck Fletcher. And as maybe as true as that is, he didn't do it. He didn't get the job done. And we went into a season with, Provorov on the top. And it was just been a revolving door on his right side ever since. Braun's been up there pretty much half of the season, or maybe a little bit more than that. But losing Niskanen or him retiring, you figured that something was going to happen, that a shoe was going to drop. And when it didn't, instead we signed Gustafson, who I remembered his season that he had with the Blackhawks, but I couldn't give a damn.
Neither could he, apparently.
And then I'm looking at him, and I'm looking at Gostisbehere, and I'm like, we're paying $7.5 million between two players who are virtually the same. Now, obviously, you know, looking back, Gustafson is not the same as Gostisbehere, and I give Gostisbehere a whole lot of shit for his defense, but Gustafson's defense is just decrepit. It's
practically non-existent.
But I still, even now, I still can't believe, I don't believe that Niskanen retiring and just going away is the biggest reason why this team has failed the way that it has. Elaborate? Well,
yeah, please. I don't friggin' know.
It's a gut feeling. Like Niskanen, look, He was a solid player. I liked Niskanen the way that he looked on this line. I liked him with Provorov. I thought, I didn't expect him to be here. When we traded for him and he had 2 years left on his term, I expected him to play out that that contract and then move on into the sunset or sign with some other team, because by then maybe perhaps Sanheim has done well enough where he can go up, or Myers perhaps could go up. But like I said, it's just a gut feeling. I think that it's – did Niskanen leaving obviously hurt the team? Yes. But I don't – like it couldn't have been like the biggest domino to fall. it had to have been so much more. And it's the team is missing a, it's missing a glue, whether it's a guy, you know, more than one guy, or it's half the roster's got to be flipped. It's missing a cohesiveness on a game to game basis. Passes aren't being connected. They're bad passes, bad puck handling, hesitancy. The team plays very, very soft. And that couldn't have just been all because of Matt Niskanen leaving. I could also say Pitlick, for instance. You know, I had no idea who that guy was.
You know, Pitlick was, I just liked his name.
But you see the way that he plays. You see the way that his engine never quits when he's out there on the ice. And you don't get a lot of that from, you don't see a lot of that this season from the Flyers at all. So, and I can tell you, when you're on a sports team, whether it be hockey or football or anything else, when you see one of your teammates who's putting it out pouring his heart out on every single shift or every single time they're on the field, the pitch, whatever you want to call it, that does something to you. And if guys like Niskanen or Pitlick are playing as hard as they are and as effective as they were, then it's going to elevate the rest of the team. It's going to push the rest of the team. And I don't see, I mean, other than maybe, you know, Giroux for a handful of games this season, who like he played out of his mind. We don't have that consistency from some of the other leaders, perhaps maybe even from Couturier, but you're missing it from Hayes. You know, you've missed it from Voracek. I mean, Voracek's been vocal, but he's just kind of sounded like a smacked ass in interviews and whatnot. You know, like, so it's a different complexion from this team. And I think time's either run out or it's running out very, very fast for a number of the veterans.
Well, that was my next question. What do you do with the core? Do you wait any longer? Do you break it up? What do you do at this point?
No holds barred. We're in a vacuum, and like all the rules, the salary cap goes away, no move clauses, they go away, all that kind of stuff. Or are we talking about realistically?
Realistic. What do you want versus realistically? What do you think is going to happen, I guess?
Well, first and foremost, I think that what we ought to be doing is trading draft picks. I think we've got a first round draft pick that we have no business using in the draft at all. I think it has to be paired with an actual NHL player. I think it has to be moved in order to acquire a top pairing defenseman. I think at the very least this offseason, what we need to be doing is getting two more top four defensemen. I think that the bottom six needs a lot more size. I'm not a fan of this this belief that you can have four scoring lines on your roster and every single one of them is speedy. I think you're going to get ripped to shit. You've got to have Braun, not the player, but the actual, you've got to have the characteristic. You've got to have Braun. You got to hit. You got to take hits. You've got to be able to clear the crease. And you've got to have that snarl. And all of that just sounds like a cliche nowadays, but it isn't. That's really how you play the game.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
What would I like in the top six? I mean, would I love a pure goal scorer? Sure. But, you know, those are luxuries. Those aren't really necessities. I'm fine with the playmakers. I'm fine with the two-way players. But, you know, we're lacking down the spine of this team, the center position, which, you know, we've been drafting centers forever. And after every draft, people are like, oh, another center. Oh, another center. And can we stop drafting centers? Well, we don't have enough centers. We don't have enough NHL caliber centers that can carry us through three playoff series and then a Stanley Cup final. We don't have that. And the ones we do have are another year older. Couturier is coming up on an extension next season. And you got a question, like if we re-sign Couturier, he's going to be close to 30 years old. That extension is going to have term anywhere between 6 and 8 years. So, I mean, he's going to be re-signed into his late 30s. It's absolutely going to have a no move clause. And then right behind him is Kevin Hayes, who's a he's a $7 million player, and he's not playing like a second line center. And then right behind him, you got Nolan Patrick, who I don't even know what the hell Nolan Patrick is yet. And then everybody else wants to talk about Morgan Frost. I don't know what the hell Morgan Frost is. Like, so I'm
about Nolan Patrick.
Yeah.
Don't think the dude's 100%.
He is.
I know people are like, well, he's medically cleared. That's wonderful. He's not 100%. I don't think 90% of hockey fans can grasp even the tiniest head injury and what that does to a person, let alone what he went through. I don't think Nolan Patrick's a factor right now. I don't think Nolan Patrick will ever get. And let me preface this. This is not F Nolan Patrick, get rid of him. I hate Nolan Patrick. I don't think he's ever going to be the same for whatever was messing with him. I just don't. I'm not, like I said, I'm not like the hell with Nolan Patrick. It's over. But I think he's going to be different for now. I don't think he's going to pan out. And that's whatever migraine issue there was. Here's a question. And hi, Mark. I see you there. Our other co-hosts are starting to join in. So,
hi, Mark.
Devils fan. Don't hold that against him. He's a good guy.
That was probably one of the only right decisions the Devils made recently, was picking Nico over Nolan. Because that was a big factor. Who do you pick? And they went with Nico.
It was a big question.
Yeah.
It was a big question. And I was – you know, I've tweeted it, but I know that there's somewhere on record. I said that even if we had the first overall pick, I'd still go with Nolan Patrick. So when it comes to my intuition, take it with a grain of salt.
Sure. let's talk about, we only got a few more things I'm going to bother you with, and I'll let you get back to your life. And I would definitely like you and Cash. I'm going to try to organize you and Cash coming on at the same time and doing like a year end thing.
Okay.
If that's okay with you, if you didn't enjoy your time, then don't come back. And I understand.
I'm enjoying myself.
So are you breaking up? Do you still not trade Claude Giroux, or do you care? Just to preface this, and I'm talking to anybody except Carter Hart. I don't give a flying rat's ass who's on this team anymore. I'm 37. Loyalty's getting me nowhere. I don't care. I don't care if it's Bill, Joe Blow, Bob Smith. I don't care if it's Claude Giroux. Whatever you got to do at this point is where I'm at.
I wouldn't be against trading anybody. And that includes Carter Hart.
Okay. Wow.
Let me back that up. Carter Hart's been, he's taken a step back along with pretty much everybody on this roster. This season. You know, if you move somebody like Carter Hart, you're probably going to create a bigger hole than the one that you're trying to plug, you know? And so you can't do that with a 22-year-old goaltender. So I'm sticking with Carter Hart through and through, unless you're absolutely blowing me away and I'm getting, you know, Patrick Waugh in his heyday, but that's not going to happen. So Carter Hart's going to stay right where he is. And I'm sure he's going to be a lot better than the way he's playing or he's played this season, along with several other of the players on this roster. But back to Claude Giroux, I can't answer that question without just getting so pissed off that I can't.
I hear you.
I get pissed off thinking about.
Look at Sean and me. Look at Cash and I. The last.
How many times have we seen through the years? You know, oh, Claude Giroux's catching up with this guy in Flyers all time points or assists or goals or this or that, and it's like, right. You get yourself pumped earlier on at like in 2013, 2014, 2015. You're pumped to see these things. But then you start getting in the back end of that decade and you're like, well, he's not getting any younger. So when the hell are we going to do something to supplement this core? And then, you know, people will tell you about Holmgren and the contracts that he had taken over at that point and the salary cap, this and that. And I don't have to get into that bullshit. Everyone's got their own freaking opinion about it. But
oh, I'm with you on that one.
you've got players like Giroux. You got players like Voracek. And they're supposed to be generational players for your franchise. And you sit around, you just kind of let them rot on the vine. And so now he's 33 years old. He's got 1 year left on that contract of his. You got a question, is he going to be re-signed? And if he's going to be re-signed, what's that cap hit going to be? How long is that term going to be? In a perfect world, do I want Claude Giroux to end his career with the Philadelphia Flyers and stay a Flyer for his entire career? Yes, without question. And even if he were to waive that no move clause and we were to trade him, what are we going to get back for that? We're not going to get anything back that's going to be equal value. We aren't. And you could say that, like, if we get a couple of NHL roster players for that who are, you know, in their mid-20s and some picks, maybe a prospect here, none of them are a sure thing. And so Claude Giroux is a sure thing. So I'd move guys like Voracek before I would move a Claude Giroux.
Oh, okay.
I would move Sanheim before I would move Claude Giroux. I'd move Phil Myers before I would move Claude Giroux. And we can go up and down the lineup, and I'd probably tell you I'd move this player and this player before I would move Claude Giroux. I think he deserves better. I think that he deserves to remain a Flyer for his entire career. But I also, at the same time, understand that, you know, what I want, what I think, or what I believe is really not the reality or what's going to be reality. And so if we can get something decent for him, let's say we go into next season and it turns out to be a big shit burger like this season's been.
Which is likely.
Then why not waive your no move clause and move on to greener pastures and get that chance at
a stand? I should say, if I'm Claude at this point, I'm like, all right,
I'm out. But we can go back to earlier to our discussion when I started questioning his leadership ability, you know, and so like maybe my entire vision of what Claude Giroux has been to this team is it's not as big and grand as I have always believed that it has been. So it's, this season is really been a mind. Can I say the F word?
I don't care.
It's been a mind fuck. I don't know what to believe. I don't really know what's going to be best for the team this off season. And I throw my hands up in the air. I hope that there's something that's doable. Do I think something's going to happen? I think there's going to be a significant trade. And that gets me kind of excited because it's going to be different because we've just been sitting around staring at the same damn thing. Like you guys have been staring at me talking for the past, you know, 9 years. And I just want something that's different. And if that includes moving on from generational players, then, you know, we survived Lindros moving on, you know, the Oilers survived Gretzky moving on, teams survive. You got to move on.
Is there anything that before you go, is there anything that I have not asked or referenced that you wanted to get out there on this episode before you come back next time?
For now? No, I think you and I pretty much covered what we needed to cover.
Yeah, I'm real happy. No, I'm Mark, were you going to add something? No. Okay. Good.
I just saw the Devils score, so it was.
Okay. What does that feel like? Does that feel nice?
You know, I hear you guys complaining, and
yeah, but you've had two cups in the last 3 cups in the last 40 years.
Three. Yeah.
Zero. Zero.
But But to me, it's baseball. It's baseball season now. So
okay, gotcha.
That's what's helped me tolerate the Eagles. That's what's helped me tolerate the Eagles. We finally got our Super Bowl.
We got it. We're good for it. Even the Phillies a little bit, but except for when Middleton was on his burner account screwing with me, and I was like, I got you, Josh, or John, or whatever the hell your name
is. It's frustrating to not see your team win. I mean, as Kelly, a Chiefs fan, I don't know what that's like.
I watched Kelly. I watched it happen. The Caps did it.
And you're happy for
her. Kelly, I was very happy for her. But my point was, if anybody understands the agony of watching the same old bullshit, it's Kelly watching the – now, she's also a Hershey Bears fan, so I don't feel that bad for her. But if she's primarily a Hershey Bears fan. I have to look at that poster all the
primary.
Time.
Primary, okay.
Yeah, primarily, yeah. Oh, trust me.
Sounds like a good woman.
Yeah, well, she picked put up with me. You call her Saint Kelly. I still every time I watch a Caps game now, I look at Laviolette and I go,
yeah,
and that's what it comes down to. Mikey, I don't mean to cut you short, but I got to yell at the Devils now for the next half hour, I will get pleasure in. We will figure out how to get you back on. I do want to get you and Cash on for an official Flyers podcast and do a whole hour for the end of the year. So I really, really do appreciate you coming on.
I'll be more prepared for that one. I promise.
You put words, you put it more eloquently than I can ever can, which is just F them. Mikey, real quick, where can people follow you on Twitter and Facebook or wherever you want them to follow you?
Yeah, Twitter is MikeyD_ONBP.
Thank you.
Facebook, if you find me, leave me the hell alone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, don't find him there, but go to Orange and Black Pack.
Yes, go to Orange and Black Pack.
Because the one thing I do have to look forward to every day is the wonderful Photoshops of game day. Because that
game
is
day photos, baby.
The only thing I have, the only thing that makes me happy, any flyer. Also, I do want to say, and I don't think you agree with me, but I do want to say, since we're talking about him, leave Gritty out of this. Mascot, bad or not, he'd still exist. It's not his fault.
I don't like the way they're using him.
I don't like the way they're using him, but I'm saying it's not Gritty's fault. It's Comcast Spectacor's fault.
Well, tell Comcast to stop shoving it up my ass.
Well, there's a lot of things I wish Comcast would stop shoving in my home, but I can't get rid of them.
Touche. All
right. No, man, I hear you, dude. No, we'll get you on soon. Really, I do appreciate it, and I'll talk to you off phone.
All right, man.
See you, man. Thank you, sir.
Take it easy.
And that was Mikey, orangeandblackpack.com. And just transitioning smoothly. I don't have to edit anything. I hope Kelly's still there. Is Paul Baker, our normal co-host. Kelly Levy is there, and our special guest wearing the worst jersey in the history of hockey. To talk about the New Jersey Devils and how they rape and pillage through minor league is Mark Viquez. No, but seriously, there's been some... Kelly, you're still with us, right?
Yep.
There's been some major news, and I'm actually going to throw it to Kelly real quick because there's been some major news in as far as minor league hockey goes that started this weekend, that the Utica Devils has been trademarked, which started a whole fury of news. And it eventually came out that the Devils are moving out of Binghamton. We'll get to that soon, Mark. But I think Kelly's the one that pointed out that the Utica Comets are the ones that grabbed the trademark.
Yes.
Because your thought was?
My thought was, well, I guess they're going to go after the Devils, or they have an agreement with the Devils, you know, gentleman's agreement or whatever. Maybe. I don't know that for sure. That's pure speculation.
Yeah,
kind of makes sense, though. They've been there before.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think it was more of a, listen, we got the trademark. We're ready for you. Like, bring it on. Which brought up all kind of nasty feelings for me, which I take personal, which we'll get into in a second. But the Binghamton Devils story is coming to an end, Mark. And Paul, everybody's on board here.
I mean, what, 3 years? There were 2 years
was it only in Binghamton? I was going to say, it wasn't years. A long time. It was
4 years. They were Newark. They were the Devils from 87 to 93.
Utica, yes.
No, I mean Binghamton. Binghamton recently.
From 2017 to 2020.
Yeah. So
this year they played.
That's at right. The Devils practice.
So like Kelly said, three.
Yeah, that's actually Rob Esch, who the Comets president, trademarked the name. And there is also speculation that perhaps he wants that name for nostalgic reason, maybe introduce a brand of merchandise, throwback jerseys. That's a little bit out there as well. But when there's smoke, there's fire.
The owner of the Binghamton Devils has said he has been informed the Devils will not be back next year.
Yeah, they're not coming back. We assume they're going to Utica. We assume there's no official. Where there's smoke, there's fire. I assume right. They're going to go to Utica. But will Vancouver go to Binghamton? Probably not.
Probably not. I was going to say, yeah, the other part of this that's been confirmed is Vancouver is leaving. They're going to at least shoot for getting their team in their time zone.
Yeah.
Or at least two closer than it is now.
And will any team go to Binghamton? You know, is there any team looking to switch? Because Binghamton is going through some major renovations at their arena, which I don't know if they have started yet, but that's going to transform that building into a modern facility. Because if you look at it right now, it's looking way older than it should be.
It's not a good building, no.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a dinosaur. It's sort of like the New Haven Coliseum Part 2 in some ways in design, but. That's too bad because I think in a few years that's going to be a very beautiful arena, and we know Binghamton's a hockey town. We know they love their AHL. Will another team show up, or will they opt for the ECHL route? Which
what are you going to say, Kel?
Oh, I would. I've never been to Binghamton, so I don't know anything about the arena personally.
They're not missing much, Kelly.
Yeah, no, is it a much older building?
73.
Oh, okay. So it's from the
48 years.
From the brutalist.
Brutalist.
Yeah. Exactly. Kelly.
That is the exact term.
It's one of those concrete square blocky buildings. Yeah.
They just it's like an Amish barn raising. They just built the same arena everywhere. They just plopped it down in a different location. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Brutalist, which that's I just saw a YouTube video on the New Haven Coliseum, a four-parter, which talks about that whole concept as well. They're looking to renovate it. They want to do two phases. The second phase will include a second ice sheet, a waterfront park, a hotel, and completely transform the appearance of that venue. Now, it'd be great if they have a hockey team there to help them, but it doesn't look like it's going to be the Devils, which is too bad. I thought Binghamton was a good spot for the Devils. I think it's a nice little market there. I don't know how attendance has been. I know at one time they were attracting over 4,000 people, but that's been quite some time ago that they have done that. They're kind of like 3,000 people. Not terrible, but they do rank towards the bottom of the AHL in terms of attendance. Maybe 30 years ago, that 3,500 mark would have been respectable, but you know, the Devils apparently want to go someplace else. They made a list of demands that Binghamton ownership was unable to even consider possible. We don't know what those are. That hasn't been released. Tom Mitchell, the executive VP of operations for the Binghamton Devils, did not elaborate what those demands were by the New Jersey Devils. We may find out soon enough, but as of right now, we don't know.
So, talk me off the ledge, Mark, from trashing the New Jersey Devils because
you're a Flyers fan. That's
No. Hold on. I'm coming at this from a hockey fan right now. We're ignoring the Flyers' existence, which the Flyers have done all season anyway. So they're way ahead of me in that game. Do the Devils actually care about minor league hockey? I don't think they do, right? Like, now, for those who are, if they're new to the show, there was this little team in Trenton called the Trenton Titans, who, yes, were owned by the Flyers. I'm not coming at it from the Flyers aspect. I'm telling you like it is, and if anybody needs to correct me, all three of you, feel free. Titans were in there. They were a Flyers affiliate. We're selling that building out for years, with or without that cup. They did win the Kelly Cup. I don't know what happened and why, but the Flyers sold to the Devils. and they became the Trenton Devils.
First mistake.
You said it first. You said it first.
Good.
The almost overnight, that team stopped. They, by the end of that first season, into the next, we've both been there. I think Paul, you've not. Paul, have you been to a Trenton Devil? You were Trenton Devils.
I've been to the Trenton Devils. Yeah. I've been to the Trenton Titans.
Yeah, slightly different experience.
Before and after.
Yes.
They rebranded afterwards.
Yes, I'll get to that in a second. By the end of the first season and certainly going to that second season, nobody cared. Nobody cared. And when I say rebrand, the Devils name came in, the colors came in, and it was just,
yeah,
I don't know what happened. It killed that area. They would try to go to Boardwalk Hall and play different teams. You'd get more people there. Not by much. I've seen games at Boardwalk Hall with the Devils. There's not a lot of people there. The Flyers come back in and try to revamp Trenton, and it's too late. It's dead. And I'm pretty sure that I counted 100 people at that last game I went to.
Yeah, well, I think when you're in the Trenton, New Jersey market, you probably have a majority of Flyers fans. You may have some Devils, Ranger fans there. So I would try not to brand yourself the Devils in order not to
alienate
your Flyers fans, which makes perfect sense.
My point, like, why would you do that?
But the Devils organization likes to name all their teams the Devils. It's just like right now, if they do go to Utica, I wish they would keep the Comets name.
If you want to change your red to the red and black and green, sure, yeah. No problem. Keep them the goddamn Comets.
Yeah, keep them the Comets. It has a great history there. It comes from the Clinton Comets of the Eastern Hockey League. Bring back that U logo with the devil tail as a side patch. That way you can have that cool logo that I used to like as a kid. But the problem with Trent, I don't think hockey has been back.
No, it's dead.
It's which in that arena, you talk about Binghamton feeling old. The last time I was in the Trenton, I don't know what it's called.
Sun now. National Bank Center or something.
It's something else now. That feels much older. I think it was built in 1998-99. Like that arena has seen better days. And I don't know if the neighborhood, it's not a very walkable neighborhood there. I don't know what happened. I don't know why the fans did not come back after they changed the name. It just seemed like, okay, we made a mistake. We're sorry.
It was. Yeah. They were
back. But
so
nothing, nobody, no, you would even think a Federal Hockey League team would want to try. No one has tried.
I'd go to see that tomorrow.
You probably have 100 people.
Oh my God. I don't
know, man, if you've ever seen the Federal League.
Well, the NHL was in there or was in there.
Okay.
The U.S. junior team took up residence there. Ooh. I don't know if they're still, I don't know what's going on with the NAHL this year.
No, there's no team there now, Kelly. I was actually just at an NAHL game this past weekend.
Oh, yeah. I know they were playing. I couldn't remember what happened with Trenton. A bunch of the teams kind of in the mid-Atlantic that lost ECHL, or, well, not AHL, but ECHL teams wound up, they became NAHL.
Yeah, some may just be on hiatus. Some may be back next year. I'm not sure. I don't think that makes sense. Trenton anymore, though.
Yeah, and then getting back to Binghamton, we've seen a lot of teams leave. We saw the Whalers leave the Springfield, probably to be closer to operations. Rangers left to go to Hartford, maybe bigger market, more sponsorship opportunities. We saw the Senators leave to be closer to Ottawa because Belleville had renovations to their venue. So if the Devils are going to Utica, is it because Utica has had all those wonderful sellouts and plus their arena had been renovated recently? Is it just opportunistic moves to get out of Binghamton, even though Binghamton claims to be a hockey town? And I would say they are. I mean, they've always averaged around the same amount of people to their games. They're never going to get 6,000-7,000 people like Ontario or San Diego. It's just not a big enough arena or market to do that, but it's a shame that we see teams, you know, leave throughout the history of almost 50 years.
All right, North Jersey boy.
North Jersey
boy. I'm going to need you to defend your honor.
Okay.
Whose fault is it? Is it Binghamton or is it New Jersey's? I'm sure.
I would say I don't like the Devils leaving. If the Devils had signed a 5-year contract, you should honor that contract and leave after that sum.
But there is an opt out in this contract, is there?
Is there not? Or I thought Utica.
I don't know.
I think they both had opt outs.
Okay, now if there's an opt out, then they have all legal rights to do that. Now here's the thing: I don't know what they were demanding. We don't know that yet. But I think Binghamton is doing all it can to make sure that it has a future in the AHL. But if I see that's the thing, I don't know if the Devils have an opt out. But if you say so, Paul, then they have every right to leave.
I could be wrong, but I'm fairly sure that I read there's opt outs on both ends. That's why people have put these puzzle pieces together as they have.
Kelly, what's your thought on all this, given the history of minor league Devils teams?
Oh man, they don't have a really good run there since Albany.
Yeah.
So there, I was.
I can actually trace it back further than that.
Well, I was looking at the history there. Yeah. Because their first affiliate at like their top affiliate was the Wichita Wind. So.
Yep.
Really? Which was the last year of that franchise.
Yep.
Wow.
Who moved to Montana to become the Montana Magic, and they closed up after 1 year.
So. You must be looking at the same page I am, Kelly.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting. They don't list Trenton in the secondary list. Which
yeah, they do.
Is it?
Down at the bottom.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
At the bottom where it friggin' belongs.
I did the same thing. It's like, where are the Trenton Devils?
Oh, yeah, because I was looking for Trenton Titans, too. That would be part of that problem.
That'd be part of that problem.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I can't say I've ever heard at like the AHL level. I've never heard anything interesting or exciting, like promotion wise, to try to get people in the building coming from an AHL Devils team. Like, you know, you hear wacky stuff like all the time, and you know, there's teddy bear tosses and there's this and there's that. Mm. Like, because it's all about getting butts in the seats at the AHL level. Half of it these days is definitely playing the young players and develop, you know, letting them play and figure out stuff and the young guys and the mix and all that. But the other part of it is you need to get people in the building so that you can pay everyone and, you know, do it again the next 2 days or whatever. I never hear anything remotely interesting or anything from these Devils teams, which, I mean, kind of goes along with what I think of as the Devils. That's kind of their market, is we play hockey. And now it's getting exciting because they've got some really fun talent, but we don't play exciting hockey. We win with our system, and that's kind of
that used to be the case. It's not working right now, but
well, I mean, you know, it helps, you know, when you've got some guy named Brodeur in net. So
Niedermeyer.
Was in net the other day, and that was weird. I was watching the Bears and Binghamton play, and I saw Brodeur in the back of the goalie shirt, and I'm like, oh wait, that timing would work out. And I had to look it up because that's not a terribly uncommon name in Canada. And I was like, yep, nope, that's him. As soon as he took his mask off, I was like, oh my goodness, that is definitely his son.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's interesting. I do not recall the promotional events, with the Devils minor league team, but I know with Utica, I believe that the Mohawk Valley Group operates the team, the arena, and controls the promotions there. So maybe you'll see a difference. Maybe you'll see a Utica Devils Martin Brodeur bobblehead.
There you go.
That would be awesome. There's the connection. He played there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I've heard nothing but good things about the Comets, the staff, the game day. I have two friends who are locals there, and they love that team. I mean, they're hockey fans anyways, but they love the Comet. There's a connection to that team, which is so cool to see, because I mean, Utica went without a team for quite some time after the Devils left.
Yeah, no,
that was seems to be a trend as well.
Someone who went to many, many Lowell Devils games, I can absolutely confirm what Kelly was saying. And yeah, you know, Kelly, you were on such a track that I was going to follow. And let's just really quickly, let's check out the history of Devils affiliates and the scorched earth they've left behind. Now, you already talked about the Wichita Wind.
Right.
Then they went to the Maine Mariners, who promptly moved out of town to Providence. Then you had the Utica Devils, who ended up not having a team for a good 30 years. The Cincinnati Cyclones, well, I think they may have lasted a little while longer, but I don't think
they were. Yeah, they're still there. Cyclones are there.
Well, they were only that, in
and the Devils are
year.
Only affiliated with them for one, year. That's an IHL year.
And then you've got coming up after that, Albany Riverettes. Then they left them, went to Lowell. Lowell hasn't had a team since they left. Went back to Albany. Albany has been done since they left. And now in Binghamton, who is also in danger of being done.
Being without a team.
Well, so I mean, Albany.
Quite a track record.
Yeah, I did go to an Albany game many, many years ago, and there was nobody there. I mean, that's a giant arena. I know they cut off some of the seating there. Now, talking to a lot of Devils fans or minor league fans, hold on, my dogs are barking, they complain more of the Albany market being a problem more than the Devils organization.
But the River Rats were very successful for a long time.
Hell, I liked the River Rats because they were called – the River Rats.
Yes, and I had a jersey at one time. I wish I knew what I did with that.
Well, yeah, and the River Rats, the time that they were the River Rats matched up with definitely the powerhouse years for the Devils. So, yeah, you know, between the young guys that they were bringing in to get ready to feed into the boring system, like they were playing the exact same system as the NHL. They put that in place. So I don't know if that's still the case, but for 20 years, the AHL Devils affiliate looked just like the Devil, only the names on the back changed. And, you know, it's one thing when you've got Martin Brodeur in net being Martin Brodeur. It's another when you're watching AHL level talent try to work its way through the trap every single game. Because they put the system, you learned the system because you were playing it if you got to the NHL, you were playing that system. So you needed to know it. So they played it every night. And, oh, boy.
I just so you don't think I'm crapping on the Devils, which I will at any, which I would usually do in any juncture. But I told Mark, I was like, that's not about that this week. I want to talk about minor league history, about the Devils. I think it's boring for any team to at least not try to make their affiliate different a little bit. And I know it comes from a position of being spoiled. Phantoms. It's even the logo is a twist on the Flyers logo, where it's basically the Flyers logo mirrored to look like a Phantom. And the colors are different. The Hershey Bears, that's by mistake. Well, not by mistake, that they were the Hershey Bears. They weren't being called anything else.
That was location, really.
Yeah, yes. And yes, I will say the Providence Bruins. I just realized I took a huge steaming crap on the Bruins when I didn't mean to, but I think that's boring. I will say this. I was going to say, I like the Providence Bruins using the yellow jersey, so they get my nod, the tip of the hat instead of the Boston Bruins. You guys. Go ahead, Paul. I know.
Yeah, that was very interesting. When the Providence Bruins came about in the mid-90s, part of the deal was our mayor, I didn't live in Providence. Providence's mayor, Buddy Cianci, insisted that the team be called the Bruins. The ownership did not want to call them the Bruins, but Cianci wanted that connection.
Okay, well, is that person still there?
Cianci died a while ago.
Okay, well... Repeat the shit out of that.
Okay.
I didn't mean to curse, by the way. Sorry.
What about when the Whalers were in Binghamton and they just tilted their logo on the side? That was a cool concept.
But that's different. That's not.
Brilliant.
I love that.
It's absolutely brilliant. I think it's better than the Utica logo, but the Utica Devils logo is
fantastic. Utica Devils logo is great.
Infinitely better than the New Jersey Devils logo, which I hate. It's absolutely drives me insane.
Classic.
The look Mark just gave you was everything wonderful. I was hoping for in this episode.
I can't stand it. It's not a complete either letter. Oh, it drives me nuts.
It's not an N. It's not a J.
I just want you to know, Mark, as much as I hate the Devils, even I looked at her like she was crazy. I was like, what do you mean? It's great. It's NJ and the Devil.
They never had the Gordon Fisherman on their jersey. So
this is true.
That's true. That point. Hey, I like them better than the Islanders.
But
I'm not like screw those minor league teams if they're the same. But I just think it's so much better to have a veiled reference to your team.
Oh, it would be nice.
Than a we're the same. I hate.
Yeah,
that.
Like reading.
I'm not
going to
argue
like,
with you there. You're absolutely right.
Try to read the room a little.
Sorry, Paul.
Like every.
No, I agree with you.
Every area is not the same, but like I said, this is my hockey theory that it's the way they function, not only as a team on the ice, but they function that way in management. It's just everything has to be the same because we can't even conceive of having to deal with different colors on our team. It might confuse the prospects. I have no idea what the reason is.
But Lamoriello's not there anymore.
Well, see, that was the blame. It was, oh, well, Lou's in charge. Well, he's not here anymore. So, you know, I guess a baby step was introducing the third jersey, the throwback.
Right. Talk about a baby step.
a very small baby step. But yeah, for some reason, there's certain teams that, like the Atlanta Braves in baseball, they wanted all their minor league teams to be called the Braves.
Yeah, go F yourselves. They hate it.
And so they stick a team in the Atlanta metro market, and they're like, oh, well, maybe we should change our logo and colors because no one's coming to our games and we're not selling merchandise. But I really wish the Devils, if they are going to Utica, would keep the Comet's name, maybe change the colors up. You know, do something a little bit different to stand out because I think the Comets brand is huge right now.
Here's why it won't happen. Look how much we're talking about the Utica Devils. It's going to be the Utica Devils because they're going to grab. No, and I'm not saying this in an insulting way. I'm not doing that. No, I know, Paul. I know, Mark, what you're thinking. They're going to go for the nostalgia thing because the nostalgia thing, even for me, is, man, the Utica Devils were pretty awesome. We like that U. Even Kelly was saying it. The logo was great, better probably than the parent. Franchise, of course they're going to bring that back. Prospect of that sucks. Or keep the Vancouver colors and then put the Utica thing on it. I don't know. Just do something different. I hate that. I think it's lazy.
Well, the problem is they treat it like they're McDonald's and no one cares about the Devils. No one cares about the Devils other than Devils fans. Like,
well, I think that might be the case. No one does care about the Devils. How about this? How about the Utica Devils will sport jerseys with green and red?
I'm down. That's better. That's fine.
Imagine they did that.
I'm down.
All you gotta do to get him to go along with anything, Mark, is just put green in
put
it.
Green in it.
No.
The green colors, but I kind of appreciate them now.
Hold on. In the case of the Devils, Kelly, what was I saying when that jersey came out? As much as I hate the Devils,
I remember that jersey.
I love the green and red. I don't care what anybody says. That green and red's great. It's like a Christmas jersey. Who cares?
There's Paul. Yeah,
Hey,
yeah. I remember as a kid watching. I think there was a show called Ringside. It used to come on MSG Network. It was from TSN. And they would always show the highlights and you would get to know the AHL teams and players. And I remember seeing that Utica logo thinking, oh yeah, that's the Devils. That's their minor league team. That's so cool.
Yeah. When it's some sort of like, when there's, it seems like there's some kind of relationship between the two. I always think it's better. I always really liked what the Kings tried to do when they really got into the game. So you had the LA Kings, you had the Manchester Monarchs, and the Reading Royals.
Yeah,
so you had a theme. Different. They had different logos. They had different colors. They would sometimes they'd go to the black and silver or whatever. But I thought that was a really cool way to approach it. But not many places do that anymore. I don't know. I'm not sure either these days. If I think it seems to be that the model is moving to the NHL teams owning the affiliate teams. I think back in the day, especially 80s and 90s, it was a lot more of independent ownership who had agreements, but the ownership in that town were the ones who actually ran the team, you know, day to day, and they got players from the NHL, but you know what was happening, you know, with staff and that kind of thing was based on what the owners of that team said, not what you know, in this case, the Devils were telling them from, I don't even know where they were based at that point.
It's been a lot. Yeah.
It would be nice if the Devils can just stay in one town for more than what, five, yeah, six, 7 years, and just kind of develop a fan base in that market. And let's be honest, fans in Utica and fans in Binghamton, they're smart and intelligent. They know the difference between ECHL, AHL, independent hockey. And I feel bad for the people in the Southern tier, because it's like, dang, once again, Albany Devils. It's like, dang, once again, you know, somebody's leaving us. You know, we're showing support. We're about to make renovations to our building. I don't know what the economic status is in Binghamton. I know the Mets almost left the double A. They almost moved the double A team out of there. And I think Chuck Schumer stepped in to save it.
Oh, thank God Chuck Schumer did something constructive. So
apparently people want to leave Binghamton.
I have a question.
Going to Binghamton, that's why you want to leave.
I have a question.
I only went here to find out how to get away from here.
The question down the line. Since we're talking about the aesthetics of the Devils, I know that the Binghamton Devils aesthetic is generally considered crap, but I think it's good enough and different enough that I actually like it, even though it looks like a little pencil on his chin. How what do you guys think? I'll go to the graphic designer first, Kelly.
The tail is disturbing on the current logo. When it was a letter, I was okay with it. Again, it works better in every logo other than the New Jersey logo. But the current one with just the face is just, I don't like it. It's not symmetrical and all that. And then they've got this stupid label on the helmet that says Devils.
I didn't notice it until I didn't even notice it until Kelly pointed it out to me the last time the Phantoms played before they got COVID protocol. We're good, Paul. We got a good look at it. Perfect. that it's a devil with a helmet on the front that says devil, as if we didn't know already that they were the Devils.
I was confused that the horny sunburned man was not a devil. We got it. He's a pencil sunburned horn tail thing guy with a helmet. It seems weird that he would need a helmet, but that's besides the point. Yeah, maybe they're going for the Seinfeld reference or whatever. That would just be another reason I hate it. So
all right, Mark, any closing thoughts about, because I do want to, while you're here, I do want to mention the one other bit of hockey news, unless Paul has to add anything.
I never liked the Binghamton Devils logo either. It, you know, my thing is, you know, and people who are listening, Devils are named after the Jersey Devil, which is this mythical creature that lives in the Pine Barrens that doesn't really look like what we think of as a devil. I would love for somebody to come up with a cute cartoon character of that image. And I've seen one. I have to look for it. Please show somebody that. I've showed that to you before. Somebody could come up with that as a logo, as a mascot. That would be excellent.
Yeah, because the New Jersey Devil is like a horse hoofed creature.
Yeah,
Huge head, and he's got wings.
Yeah,
and he's the 13th child of the Leeds family.
Yeah, it's a unique.
Which I always found the lure of this confusing, because Mrs. Leeds was so mad that she had a child, even though she would know that she had sex, that she damned it to hell. And when he was born, he was the horrid Jersey Devil that you see still alive hundreds of years later to this day in the Pine Barrens in New Jersey. Sometimes he flies over to Philly and says hello.
Because all the logos the Devils have been your, you know, Christian based.
Yeah, I never understood why they didn't just straight up, because even the New Jersey Devils, the original Jersey Devils in the Cherry Hill Arena, even they had a less Christian devil.
Yeah.
Where it was kind of like, what the fuck is going on here? Okay. Since I have Mark here, I'm going to include him in this discussion. The ending with the Devils talk. The a record was broken, even with correct grammar, this past Monday. If you didn't see the gloves, Kel, I'll explain in a second. It was amazing. Patrick Marleau is it the all-time most games played in the NHL? Has beaten Gordie Howe, is played the most games in NHL history. And I already asked Kelly offline, so I'm going to ask her first. He's an all-star, correct?
You mean a Hall of Famer?
Hall of Famer, yes, that's what I meant.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I also want to point out that I did see a lot of people, sure you understand who, that were saying he's nowhere near as great as Gordie Howe. Like, nobody said that. He is indeed going to be a Hall of Famer based on his accomplishments alone.
Question. No question about it.
And he just played more games than Gordie Howe. No one said that, oh, he's better than Gordie Howe. No one in the world, in the rational hockey world, said that or thought that. Anyway, our guest, Mr. Viquez tonight, Patrick Marleau, is he a Hall of Famer?
Of course. He's got 500 goals, 500 assists. Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer.
He's high on these lists, too. I can tell you this.
He's probably not a name you think about. He's you look at his stats, you look at his record, the proof is in the pudding. And I think sometimes you get arguments with people who say this person should be in the Hall of Fame, that person isn't, especially in baseball. you look at his stats, I think 522 goals.
566.
566. Okay. So 566 goals, even better. And he may even play a few more years. He may have 600 goals. So God bless him. I love the fact that there are guys still that were born around the same time as I was in the 70s that are still playing professional hockey. So God bless him. Yes, he's a Hall of Famer. And if you disagree with me, you're wrong.
You're wrong, damn it. You're in it. Yeah, see, Jersey guys know what's up. You're wrong, and you're an idiot.
This is what happens when two Jersey guys hang out, Paul.
Yeah.
Then they get all loud.
Well, you have two New Englanders, so we'll balance them out.
With
actual correctness.
No kidding. Yeah, exactly. You got two New Englanders. Shut up, you sons of bitches. You're both from the same area.
Rude. Loud.
That's right. Opinionated.
Connecticut bastard.
Speaking of the Devils, they were down 6-0. Now they're down 7-5.
Woo-hoo.
Ooh, okay. Big comeback.
He's coming
back. That's... When you first asked that question, Dan, is Patrick Marleau a Hall of Famer? My first instinct was no. Yeah. But then I opened up his stats. Then I went, yes.
Yeah, he's one of those guys.
He's got the longevity and he's got the numbers. I mean, hey, what else can you do?
Yeah, I mean, if Ovi hadn't been in the league, he would have been the goals guy. I mean, he's been second to Ovechkin, I think, like his entire career, which obviously precedes Ovechkin. But like, he was putting up 30, 40 goals a season regularly. It's just Ovi was putting up 50 for a while, you know, like he was just putting up crazy numbers, but he was out in San Jose for the majority of his career and he's back now. So you know, that West Coast thing, I think, comes into play there too, but
he's got that Marcel Dion thing going where he was on teams that didn't have a ton of success and he just kind of did his thing out there.
Yeah, exactly. I think you ask any big hockey fans, I don't think there's much doubt.
I might have just stumbled on a good comparison there, Marcel Dion.
I only asked because I saw that conversation this weekend way too much. I saw two things: that he was on he was as good as Gordie Howe, or people are arguing that he's nowhere near as Gordie Howe, and I'm like, literally nobody said this. And that there is a discussion on him being in a Hall of Fame. I'm like, Reed,
yeah.
What are you? I don't understand what you're.
It's like, yeah, who's the all-time leader in games played in the other sports, like baseball? Who's played the most games in baseball? I don't know.
That's a very good question.
I'm trying to think.
Like in basketball, isn't it Karl Malone?
Hey, Siri.
Who's played the most games in MLB history? Baseball's either Cap Anson or Ty Cobb. It's somebody who played 25.
Yeah, I mean, You wouldn't consider Cap Anson as the best baseball player ever. No. I mean, in basketball, you wouldn't consider Karl Malone as the best, but they played the longest.
If you could put in, he's been playing since 1997. I mean, if you could put in 23, 24 years of service, good service, and like you say, he played for San Jose for the majority of his career.
What a draft, huh? Joe Thornton at one, yeah. Patrick Marleau at two.
Yeah.
You guys want to know who played the most games in MLB history?
Yeah.
Call Yastrzemski.
He won't be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, Pete Rose. Is it Pete Rose? Get out of here, Rose.
But would you say Pete Rose was the best baseball player of all time?
No, but he's definitely a Hall of Famer.
No.
You know what? But I can tell you about Pete Rose if
he did not. Well, let me rephrase that. He is a Hall of Famer, except.
Except, yeah. If he did not have that baseball stats, yes, he should be.
That's what I mean. Yes.
Have, yeah. If he did not have that scandal, I think we would look at Pete Rose a little bit differently because Pete Rose was one hell of a player.
My mom tells a story, dude. Mark.
Three different positions. I mean, the guy could do anything you ask him to. I mean,
couldn't get a good haircut.
Mark, my mom tells a story where Pete Rose came to Philadelphia. And she's like, "What? No. Why would you? He sucks. Well, he sucks now." And she's like, "Prove to me that he's worth it." And what happened? And she's like, "Well, he shut me up because there you go."
Didn't he win a batting title his first year and like 380 or something like that?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, he was productive up until about age 40, I think, right around.
Then he started gambling.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the body catches up with you, but wow, Pete Rose, most games, I guess, I mean, that makes sense. Wow.
Most games is NBA history.
Karl Malone, I believe.
Probably Karl Malone. Apparently, football, George
Blaine. Well, they're including NBA and ABA now.
Well, they've always had.
So it's Robert Parrish.
Robert Parrish.
Okay. Wow.
Robert Parrish was 1611, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with 1560, Vince Carter with 1541, and Dirk Nowitzki with 1522.
Wow, we're not even anywhere close.
I didn't even hit the top four there. Wow.
Who would Carl Malone?
I am not a basketball man, all right.
How could you not get Robert Parrish this
year?
You know, once you said, I was like, shit, I should have known that.
That makes sense. Yeah, I know, because he did play 20 years.
The mailman's at number six at 1476.
Okay. Wow. All the guys passed him afterwards. Even the guys who were younger than him.
Kobe Bryant is in the top 20. I was wondering about that. He certainly is. You know who's not? Michael Jordan.
No.
I kept retiring.
John Stockton. Stockton's in there at 1504.
Stockton played a long time.
Yeah, he did. Kevin Garnett.
In the Hall of Fame? He didn't win a championship, right?
No.
Who, John Stockton?
No.
We don't talk negatively about John Stockton.
No, I was just wondering if he's in the Hall of Fame because he never won a championship.
Is he in the Hall of Fame? I think he would just based on longevity.
Stockton? Stockton's
absolutely
in all of
them.
Yeah, Stockton.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, 2009.
That's often a debate. I know. In the
Is it time for me to break out my Brad Park quote?
Hold on. He's a 10-time NBA All-Star. He's a 2-time NBA first team, 6-time NBA second team.
I don't really care.
No, but what I'm saying is 10-time. But what I'm saying is you get the 10-time NBA All-Star. I don't care how many trophies you want. He's 10-time NBA All-Star.
Well, this. When you talk about Hall of Fame, people bring up championships, and the argument I've heard for a lot of people is like championships are one thing, but for the Hall of Fame, it really comes down to individual awards because it's about you as a player. Championships are team championship. Yeah. You know, it takes a team to win. One guy doesn't win a championship, so whatever. A championship pretty much guarantees if you're borderline that you'll probably wind up in there. If you're close enough stat wise, you wind up in there if you've got the championship on the resume. But for like you were saying with Stockton, obviously a hugely impactful individual player, he just never won a championship. But yeah, one of the best ever.
Yeah, my view is it might break. You know, it might tilt the scale at the end if you're close, like you said, Kelly. But it's not going to be the determining factor.
No, there's horrible players who've won.
Brad Park's famous quote. There are guys who have won a whole lot more championships than I have who couldn't carry my jock.
Bringing it back to hockey, do you and forgive me if I don't.
Brad Park.
Like you did, so you pretty much brought up
Brad Park. Is.
I have no idea who Brad Park is.
former Ranger, former Bruins defenseman.
Yeah, okay, that's why I don't care.
70s.
Sure.
Greatest defenseman of all time.
Awesome. I'll take your word for it.
He came after Bobby Orr.
I know the name. Listen, I know the name, but I couldn't told you what his number was, what he looked like, what position he played in.
22. He had dark brown hair, kind of parted to the side.
Not helping me. That's like 5,000 guys in the NHL.
You look like you're a typical hockey player in the 70s.
That's what I was going to say.
Every 70s hockey player.
That's what I was about to say.
I know Brad Park lost a lot of Stanley Cups in Rangers.
I was about to say, did he look like he was 70 at 50, or is that what's going on?
Oh, no. They actually brought him in to pair with Bobby Orr, and then Bobby Orr busted his knee.
Of course.
Was he part of the Esposito trade? Did he? Was he?
No,
welcome to the Obey the Brad Middleton. Park episode.
Oh, okay.
They got Rick Middleton for Esposito.
So anyway, question. Host is talking now. Question.
Oh, I didn't know I could do that.
Thank you for playing along.
This is what happens after we have to hear about the Flyers for a month.
We're going to talk about Nashville now. Not stop.
Now we're talking about Brad Park.
Michael Parks is Michael Parks was a great actor.
Recreation.
So, do players? Has any player ever gotten voted into the Hall of Fame before he stopped playing?
Mario Lemieux.
Well, he was officially retired.
Yeah, was he in though?
Came back. He retired and came back.
Yeah, he retired and came
so
back.
So I'm saying is, do you think Ovi will get in before he stops playing? That was my question.
No.
No, I think Mario was elected special consideration. I think him and Gretzky.
There were only a couple guys who got, they waived the waiting period for just a couple of guys.
Right. And Roberto Clemente was waived when he was elected for baseball.
Well, that was for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Kobe Bryant as well. Am I correct on that?
Slightly obvious reasons.
No, maybe. No. Kobe's just going in this year. He's been retired.
He was going in as
5 years.
Okay.
Has it been that long? Not that it matters now.
06 he retired. Yeah, you're right. Wow.
No, it wasn't 06?
16, I think he meant.
16.
Ugh, can't do math.
I was going to say 06.
I did the same thing. People say, that was 20 years ago, and I think, all right, that's 1980.
Yeah.
Getting old. Well, since I don't care about Brad Park, I think it's time to end this episode.
You can just leave, and we'll discuss Brad Park's career in great depth and detail.
I'll see you later.
Starting with his haircuts in 1971.
72 Stanley Cup, Rangers. Losing to the Bruins.
Look up overtime game winner against Buffalo. One of the best play-by-play calls ever.
I don't care.
Nobody cares about Buffalo.
Let's just put it this way. You were leaving. Brad Park won a game 7 in overtime against Buffalo 1 year, and Fred Cusick was spazzing out so badly that the guy from Buffalo said, I would talk, but you wouldn't be able to hear me over the Boston guy screaming in the next booth.
Well, good. I'm glad. Does he make the Boston Bruins life terrible? Or the Rangers? Did he make the Rangers life of misery?
It was a horribly one-sided trade when they got him.
Good.
I think they got him and John Rattel at the same
time. Then that's all I care about. As long as the Rangers are miserable, I'm a happy guy. I have priorities of teams I hate. Anyway, factually, that's not true. The Flyers are very well. What do you want, Paul?
I got news.
Uh-oh.
No, nothing huge.
Oh, okay, good.
Got a couple new GMs in the NWHL.
That's right. I saw that. And then
two of them.
I went out. Dan actually did errands today. The first time since March. Dan, I'm talking to the third person. Dan went out and got some stuff done because he's vaccinated and he doesn't care anymore. And he wore a mask the entire time. So grow up, you bastards. Anyway, yes, NHL news. And WHL news, go for it.
Metro Riveter's new general manager is Anya Packer. So she is jumping over from heading the Players Association to running the Metro Riveters.
That worked out.
Yeah. Wonder how she got that job.
I have no idea.
And I told her I want to see her trade her wife now. Because her wife plays for the Riveters.
That would
be awesome. She thought it would be a good idea. No, she didn't say that. She just laughed at the idea. And the Boston Pride have a new president. Not a general manager. They have a new president. Hockey legend Colleen Coyne is going to be the new president of the Pride.
Wow.
Local legend in women's hockey. It's now going to be running the Pride.
Now, the Riveters, where do they play?
The other side of Jersey.
The wrong side.
Well, the pasture side up in northwestern New Jersey. The
pasture side.
They used to play at the Devil's practice facility.
In West Orange.
Yeah, and then now they move somewhere farther out from the city.
I'm glad they left because soon they were going to wear red and black and be called the Devils.
They're going to be the Metro Devils. They did change their colors to red. They had those red jerseys, remember?
Yeah. They were like, we're going to wear red for the Devils. Like, no, no, stop. Before it's too late, you're one step away for the She Devils. Don't do it.
The She Devils.
The She Devils. That'd be a cool, that'd be a nice twist.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, great. Yeah, the She Devil. That would be the so She awesome Devils. In 2021.
No,
I mean,
you still can't get rid of the Riveters. That's the best logo in the league.
That is best. Yeah, Kelly brings up a good point. The Buttes. Remember, I made that
into the National Women's Sexist Hockey League.
I just remember the episode we did when we had unveiled the names, and it was the Pride, the Riveters, the Buttes.
One of these okay. things is not like the other.
Yeah, one of these things is not like the other.
The other news from today was the OHL officially shut it down for the season.
Oh.
There was some question about them playing at least some kind of schedule, and then that became a question of what to do with the kids in the AHL, for the most part, who are playing there. They would have had to go back if they were under 20 or some complicated thing. But they shut it down officially today.
Do we know if these kids are getting an extra year of eligibility?
I have no idea. Scan through the article here, see if they mention anything.
Because at least the college NCAA kids who are playing hockey, at least are getting an extra year, if they so choose. Except for the
ideal. I mean, I hope so. That would be the right thing to do. You think? But
you know, well, we right all know
it's not always the obvious thing.
Hockey organizations aren't really keen on doing the right thing a lot of the time.
Nor is the NCAA.
Yeah.
I said hockey organizations, the NCAA.
The article I have doesn't mention anything. Yeah. They just mentioned the rules of players younger than 20 from drafted from an OHL team would have had to go back or whatever.
Well, this has been one of our longest episodes in a long time, and I had a great time doing it. I'm going to cut it shorter, though, because I've been having technical difficulties on the Twitch end all night, so like 90% of the people that were tuning in couldn't even see the broadcast. So if you're listening, it'll be up tomorrow night on YouTube, 6 p.m. Full episode, Flyers Woe and Devils in Utica. With that being said, Mark, where people follow you?
You can follow me at Ballpark Hunter on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Check out my latest video review of the Berry Bowl in Logansport, Indiana.
Paul? It's your turn.
I'm at Puckman RI.
Kelly is at None of Your Damn Business. Follow me on all social media platforms at DanLaw83. If you're watching on YouTube, watch us live on twitch.tv/DanLaw83. If you're at Twitch, go back to YouTube. VOCNation.com. If you're on your phone, go to your podcast app or Spotify. Type in VOC Nation Radio Network and listen to all the episodes there. Thank you very much for Mikey D from the Orange and Black Pack. I've never said it right anytime I've said it out loud. Look for them on social media. We will get him back on soon to do a Flyers-only episode where I won't involve any of you. And keep your ears from bleeding that week. And thank you to Ballpark Hunter Mark Viquez for joining us. For Mark, for Mike,
thanks
for Paul, for Kelly, I am Dan. See you later.
Phil Apter has been in the pro wrestling business for over 50 years.
Hey, talking here with Arn Anderson. Arn, first of all, your height and weight.
6'1", 255.
And now subscribers to VOC Nation Premium get exclusive access to Bill Apter's archived audio footage.
And where's your hometown?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, and give us something about your back. First of all, your relationship to Ole Anderson.
Ole is my...
Subscription to VOC Nation Premium starts at just $3 a month and includes commercial-free audio and video versions of our top podcasts.
Okay, we're speaking here with the manager of the World Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Tarzan Tyler and Luke Graham, and he's sort of glowing tonight about a new prospect we haven't heard of yet.
And for just $9 a month, Apter's archives are all yours.
Would you tell us who this new prospect
is? Well, I'll
is?
Tell you, Bill, I've searched the world, and I finally found the true world champion. I finally found...
Wonder what's your opinion of Ivan Koloff winning the title from Bruno Sammartino?
Well, I think I don't know what to say, but I want to say one thing. Bruno was a hell of a champion. You know?
Hear exclusive interviews with the greatest performers of all time.
This is Bill Apter, and once again, we're speaking here with Bruno Sammartino. Bruno, first of all, how did you and Bruiser lose that title to the Valiants?
Well, actually, it was a very unusual loss, if you want to call it a
did
loss.
Did Heenan have anything to do with this?
Well, yes, but the whole thing is this, that the rules, as I always understood them, was that the title could only be lost by pin or submission, which is the same rules as my title, the World Wrestling Federation. That night, it was...
To sign up, it's very simple. Head to premium.vocnation.com or go to patreon.com/vocnation. VOC Nation takes you behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history.